Quick show of hands. How many people work in private equity? And by work in private equity, I mean are at a GP firm, partnership, or in the institutional side, hold positions in private equity? Quick show of hands. That would be zero. How many people, there's a reason for this. How many people, let me get my timer. How many people have worked with private equity data in one form or another? Okay, that's good. How many people don't have any clue what private equity is and then just know that Mitt Romney was a guy who worked for Bain? Yeah, okay, that's about it. So that's not entirely unusual. A lot of the talks have been about things like the fact that we have data available, we can use them, we can analyze them, and there are some standard data sets in finance. You go to Yahoo Finance, you get S&P 500. So we're used to standards. The private equity world is by default, by design rather, it is 100% opaque. It's a world of opacity for a reason. Disclaimer, by the way, I'm not responsible if you use my package. And the other thing is, if you do use it, it's under GPL version 3. So let's get started. I'm going to do a whistle-stop tour of private equity itself, just to bring everybody up to speed, because the Mitt Romney folks among us may not know why he's so wealthy. I'm going to tell you why when you see the figures. Also, just to give you an outline before we go into the heavier mathematical part. Why bother? Why are we here? Why are we even discussing private equity, this goofy stuff, as Dale Rosenthal introduced me? Why are we here? You didn't call me then, I know, but private equity. So why are we here? Why are we discussing this? Increasingly, especially if you work at a large buy-side shop, you'll hear people want to get into this. It's the sexy end of alternatives. It's where all the yield is. It's right there. We really ought to be there, and it diversifies the heck. Our risk is lowered. Our risk profile is nothing. So we really want to be in private equity. How much of private equity is there out there? It's actually a difficult question because no one really knows. It's somewhere between $3 and $4 trillion extant, which is a sizable amount of notional. Despite all of this, and the reason why nobody works in private equity here is because all of you guys are quants, and in the private equity world, you are the dreaded acronym. You have an MBA, and your entire quantitative knowledge pretty much matches that, which is asymptotically approaching zero. However, there is a light in the darkness, and that's what I'm here to show you. What we, Axel and I, wanted to do is to outline a complete, comprehensive risk management framework to describe the stochastic model that's under this. So we're basically bringing financial ideas into the opaque world of private equity. We want to describe fees. I know they sound like nothing. Who the hell cares about 20 bips? Well, fees take on an entirely different meaning in private equity. So no Black-Scholes, let's ignore transaction fees, and we have a friction-free market. This is just a market that is friction. So we're going to look at fees very, very deeply. We're not going to make it open source. We're going to make it open source. We want this model to be the standard. And the reason is that the current standard model, which is from Yale, is used by practitioners. And it really, while it's good, it has a lot of intuition, it really lacks the mechanics of finance that we can pretty easily bring to bear. Some of you may know the rest of the biblical quote, and the darkness was not able to overcome it or comprehend it, so that's one for those who, Michael Wayland is over there, he has worked with me in private equity. So we'll see if we can overcome the darkness. What is private equity? Bold term, it's an opaque market where equity capital is put in. That's really rather too general. It could be investments that are structured as debt. You could be providing capital expansion, but it's all private. It's a deal that's done off the public radar, except if it's in public and it's a take private, then it's going the opposite direction. You know about it, but you don't necessarily know the details of the deal. It could be financial instruments like warrants on Facebook that recently went public a few years ago. Private equity partners may still hold interests. It could be there's a difference between fund investing, investing in a fund, and direct investing. Secondary investments, which is selling an existing LP asset, we'll talk about LPs in a minute. Fund of funds, which are people who get together and buy interests in private equity funds. Here's the structure of a private equity fund. We've got LPs, who are the institutional money, so think big guys like pension funds. Fund Mitt Romney, when you see GP, think Mitt. And Mitt starts fund one or fund I, then he'll start two, three, whatever. So this is the guy in the middle, the GP, the general partner who manages this money, and then he goes out and buys portfolio companies. There are a number of different strategies, leverage buyout, mezzanine, distressed debt, venture capital, they're the ones that people know. What's the life cycle? So typically someone decides to form a fund, he goes out to the market, raises capital, the LP, the limited partner, the institutional, commits the capital, the GP draws at some time, the money goes into the invested portfolio companies, and eventually, after a few years, the GP harvests the investment while managing it quite closely, especially in venture capital. Think tech startup. Many of you will have talked to venture capitalists. Hands up? Yes, many people have talked to venture capitalists, and if you haven't, you probably ought to. Finally, the GP liquidates the fund at some time. Capital drawdowns, what do they look like? With something approaching certainty, they are going to take your money. You're going to work on a $100 notional basis for committed capital. With hopeful high probability, you're going to get money back. It goes from zero and then eventually approaches some number, which we're going to discuss. This is the value of the fund. Don't be alarmed that this is less than 100 here. Remember that as the GP draws money, he invests it, but he also starts to distribute. So the value isn't necessarily 100 at any given stage. Anyone know what this curve is called? J-curve, thank you. Yes, it is indeed the J-curve. Net cash flow. So cash is initially zero. You get some cash back. It's coming in, being distributed even at this early stage, and then eventually the distributions start to occur. What's the state of the art in private equity data? Because really, I started by mentioning standards. If we had data, wouldn't it be great? We could all go out and start analyzing this, and the private equity world would probably be known to a lot more people and less opaque, more transparent. Thomson 1 used to be the golden child of private equity data under TVE, or Thomson Venture Economics, as it was called. They still have a portal. I don't know much about it. I haven't worked with their data. Axel did. He did a number of studies using for his PhD, and afterwards in the mid-2000s, or the mid-noughties, as we used to call them, he did a number of studies with private equity, with TVE, but I believe that they're falling less, they've fallen from grace to some extent. Axel also worked for a company called Cipres in Deutschland, and Cipres has deals with the, agreements with the GPs, the general partners, to access their data and the underlying portfolio company data. They provide analysis. I don't know much about it. I tried to touch base with them, but didn't really get a good feeling for what data they can provide. If anything, it's going to be provided at a level of aggregation. Cambridge Associates, you may have heard of, they give you indices. Preqin, these are guys I'm currently working with, full disclosure. If you look very closely at the image, you'll see a welcome Thomas Hart up here. They've kindly given us their data to work with, to both Axel and I. These people use FOIAs in the United States, Freedom of Information Act requests from the big public funds like CalPERS, California Pension Fund, and they request, because they've got positions in private companies, they want to know their cash flows. Cash flow is king. We'll discuss that shortly. What's the state of the art? Well, besides what we're doing, general partners use spreadsheets, discounted cash flows. Saw much of this at Morgan Stanley, where I worked for about 5 years. LPs, they mainly roll their own models, and they have a model that I'm going to discuss shortly. MSCI is the big player, and what they do is they say, what are your portfolio companies? Well, we can map them to something. What are those maps? And let's build indices from that. And they do the whole Barra thing, and it's called the Barra private equity model as a result. I'm not poo-pooing that. It's a big effort to get that together, but it's not necessarily private equity dynamics, and we're going to discuss that shortly. Yale is known for its suppression of freedom of speech, yes, but it's also known for the Yale endowment model, which was proposed in 2002 by Dean Takahashi and Seth Alexander. Here's the model, very quickly. This is your committed capital, $100, less whatever you've paid in, and then you've got a delta here, which is the distribution rate. The drawdown rate. So this gives you the accumulated drawdown at any time t. From the value of the fund, if someone told you this is the truth, it's worth $100, you would distribute from that at new, which is a certain rate of decay on the existing value of the fund. These are parameters that are purely made up. But finally, this actually works. Imagine that G, which is a growth rate, it's assumed, typically 200, 400 bips. Imagine if that were zero, then this is just the previous value plus the drawdowns, because that increases the value of the fund minus the distributions. And that, folks, is the model that is used currently by secondaries. That's it. There's no stochastics, nothing. So what do? We bring in the risk management framework, which is about Axel's upcoming papers in the Journal of Risk and Journal of Banking and Finance. A whole paper on fee structure, wow, but when you see the results, I think you'll get an idea of why. Axel is such a cool name, I've thought about changing mine by deed poll. So if you're an Axel groupie, you can read all of his work. I've provided an extensive list of his references at the back. He really is the world's foremost quantitative expert in private equity. Let's go. Let's do something serious. Why is private equity difficult? I liken this to, you've got to have a mind shift. Most of us work probably in daily data. A number of the talks have been in intraday. We all know there's a massive dichotomy and ne'er the twain shall meet. Some financial ideas cross over, but basically if you're an intraday guy, I go, okay, you deal with market microstructure. Dale here, who introduced me, is an expert on that. If you deal with macro stuff, which is everything past a day, it's a different ball game, quarterly data, yearly data, whatever. I call that macro. So just as much as you change your mindset from macro into micro, you have to change your mindset from macro into private equity. It's an entirely different world. It's long-term and illiquid. Fund lifetimes up to 14 years. Secondary markets are illiquid. You can't get out of your position easily. 50 cents on the dollar, 40 cents on the dollar, not uncommon in terms of crises. There is also this highly idiosyncratic dynamic of the drawdown of money and then the payout of money. So the goal of this is to establish a framework where we bring financial ideas that work into, bring them to bear in the private equity world. Market risk, we know about that. Liquidity risk, we know about that. You can't get out of your position. There's also funding risk. You're obligated to pay these guys. If you say to Mitt, I'm going to put $100 down, he's going to call you on that. And if you default, it's not called a default, but it's like a default, then you're legally obligated to, and you could lose all the money that you've paid in. That's problematic because it may be drawn down in 2-3 years, and a large pension fund, which is putting 250 million, maybe up to a billion, that's very large, but putting large amounts of money, they don't just leave it hanging around in Santander or a deposit bank. They're doing something with that money, but it can be called. So there is a funding risk. We're going to call value at risk. We all know what that is, but we'll go over it again. We're going to bring in a term called liquidity risk, and then cash flow risk for funding risk. Let's talk about the model. VT is our value at any time. That's value as you understand it. DT is the accumulated, how much have you been called? RT is how much have you received back? Standard Brownian motion with the market drifting at rate mu m, with sigma m being its volatility. This is our model, which is a shock that's provided to the value of the investment plus any calls that were made, minus any distributions. So it's not an enormous difference from a geometric Brownian motion. If we let I0 be the capital that's available for investment, let's ignore fees, even though I've told you we shouldn't do, but let's ignore them for the moment. Assume it's that $100 of capital. then here are the dynamics. They look rather like the Takahashi Alexander model, because we've got the capital you invested minus the distribution that happened at T, the cumulative distribution, which is the amount that's remaining for investment, is the delta, if you like, in the distribution at a particular, in the drawdown at a particular time. This drifts with a Brownian motion, which is a stochastic process. That's our second one on top of the market model. Likewise, for the distribution dynamics, we have a stochastic process, a third Brownian motion, oh, sorry, a fourth Brownian motion. I omitted to mention the idiosyncratic, this isn't working, the idiosyncratic Brownian motion, which is here. That's our second one. So let's talk about risk measures. Risk, sometimes we omit to think of VaR as being a forecast because we're looking at one-day rates and we just ignore discounting. You can't do that in private equity. When we look at the position, we have to take account for the cash that's out there. Normally you think of cash as a separate entity. No, it's part of your position in private equity. And we know what VaR is. I'm just going to gloss over this. This is secondary market risk. At the height of the crisis, you were getting 50 cents on the dollar for your investments in venture capital and buyout. In the run-up to the crisis, you were getting a premium in buyout. People would pay you more than you put into a particular investment. Great. So our liquidity risk, which is our fifth Brownian motion, is an Ornstein-Uhlenbeck process. It drifts around this long-term mean. And finally, these are the dynamics of cash. It's pretty straightforward. Let's have a look at some results that's parameterized. Monte Carlo time, lots of cores hammering out. With nigh certainty, very tightly wrapped, you're going to get your money drawn down. With very wide confidence bands, this is over 500,000 simulations of a model, you're going to get some money back, but it's going to vary all over the place. Here's the value. The graphs I used before are these graphs. I just showed you the expected value. And this is our J curve with confidence estimates. This is VaR. When you stand at time zero, you stand to lose anywhere upwards of 50 cents on the dollar. Would you invest in this? Quarterly VaR. At any point in time during the investment, if you look ahead, that is your quarterly VaR. The graphs are all the same here. This is liquidity adjusted VaR. You stand to lose over 55 cents on the dollar when we adjust for liquidity. That's your cash flow VaR. You stand to lose a lot at the start. You may recoup it, but you've still got very high VaR levels. Let's talk about, in the remaining minutes, we'll talk about management compensation. We should have heard of carried interest, and mostly, I think, certainly when I started working in private equity, I thought that was the largest component. There's a fixed management fee. It's 2 points, usually. We have a lot of data to support that. And then other things. The private equity companies in leverage buyout, when they buy portfolio companies, they charge the companies that they've just bought in order to manage them. Nice work if you can get it. I don't know if you know the Frank Sinatra song. If you can get it, you can get it if you try. So too, transaction fees. They charge for the transaction itself. It all rolls back into the fund. There's a basis change. Sometimes it's committed capital, sometimes it's net invested capital, i.e. capital minus what has been distributed out. That's a straightforward differential equation for the management fees. But if there's a management basis fee change, then we need to invoke a model which we developed together. And this, it's an open question to GPs. How do you know how much to draw when you're going to have a tapered fee basis? How do you know this? And Axel and I have tried to go through agreements and tried to come up with an answer for that, but we actually don't know, so we had to simulate it. This looks like an option, and it is. It's an option with a strange strike, which is the hurdle rate over IRR. Internal rates of return are pretty much like observables, up to the accuracy of your route-finding algorithm. Catch-up, other things you can read through. We have an equilibrium model for the fee rate, which I'm not going to discuss. I'm just going to get to the table. Here's a big table in 1 minute and 10 seconds left. I hate tables, unless I'm really interested in the figures. So let's break it down. The management fee, net present value, how much is it worth to you? This is the carried interest and the quantiles of the distribution. This is the transaction fees and this is monitoring fees. With no deal fees on the left, that's a non-leveraged buyout fund. This is a leverage buyout fund here on the right. So let's have a look, first of all, at management fees. I told you 55 cents on the dollar, 60 cents on the dollar, that's how much you could possibly lose. With certainty, you were going to lose this amount. That did not include this amount. So that's why it's so important to include fees. If I said you could lose 55 cents on the dollar, add an extra 15. So that takes me right up to 70 cents on the dollar. Let's look at carried interest. Carried interest, that option, it's zero valued for these quantiles. In this particular simulation, which would change depending on the parameterization, the option kicks in with about a 1 in 3 probability. And so your effect, it's very right-tailed, but the expected value is about $4, depending whether or not you have a catch-up. Always go for catch-up if you're Mitt Romney. Always avoid it if you're not Mitt Romney. Let's look at transaction fees. They net about $4. And finally, we've got monitoring fees. So if you add it all up in a leveraged buyout fund, which is the most popular, you've got ballpark about $20 out of every 100, or 20 cents on the dollar, if we go with that basis, on top of an T0 VAR over the lifetime of the fund of $60. Added up, you've got $80 worth out of $100 of VAR. Who wants to invest in this? It's not necessarily the end of the story, but providing very good open source risk management tools is at least a step that takes private equity out of the darkness and into the light. Any questions?